This is Salt City Hoops on ESPN 700. Your best insight into Utah Jazz basketball and the NBA in Utah. For the next 2 hours, it's nothing but NBA conversation from the local front to around the association. Now let's get things rolling with Salt City Hoops on Utah's number one sports talk, ESPN 700.
All right, welcome into the Salt City Hoops Show on ESPN 700. I'm your host, Andy Larson, alongside Zach Harper.
Yes.
We are a little bit scrambling. We've got a really fun show today, first of all, a little bit of a crazy show for you. For whatever reason, I don't know why I did this. I asked you guys on Twitter what you guys wanted us to talk about today. And because I am, what, like a masochist? Like, I decided to say yes to every single suggestion.
I think they're all good suggestions.
Most of them.
I think
the spreadsheet one was a little bit interesting.
It gives us stuff to talk about, which is kind of the goal here.
Yeah. No, I like it. And I want to, I want to fill what you guys, I want to make our audience happy. We don't exist for any other reason besides to, like, make you guys talk about things that you're interested
right.
in and hopefully a way that entertains you in some weird way.
Yes.
Or not weird way, even if we entertain
preferably
you
weird, though. preferably
weird.
And
show.
Look, we're all just looking to kill time here, right?
Yeah.
That's all we're doing.
Yeah, you're driving, or if you're not driving, I mean, even more kudos to clicking on the link. And
you're not doing homework right now, or you're
right.
not, ending your lunch break early.
You're listening to this later as a podcast. I mean, good on you. That's... And so we're here to serve you guys.
What are the odds there's a family around the dinner table right now with the radio on listening to us because they wanted to listen to us during dinner time?
I hope so. If that's you guys, I mean, call in, first of all, 877-353-0700. I want to know, like, what you're eating, what your family dynamic is like, whether or not you'll adopt us.
I made chili the other night, so they can get the recipe from me if they'd like.
We have a lot to offer.
Yeah, we've got a lot to offer here.
So you call us, or anyone is welcome to call us, not just families listening to us around the dinner table. 877-353-0700. Or you can also tweet us as well, which is how we got most of these suggestions, at Andy B. Larson or at Talk Hoops. So, this first segment, like I said, we got like 15, 20 suggestions overall, and literally every segment we're just doing something related to those suggestions. This first one is from Chris at Squared K2, asking for the record projections for the rest of the season. And I thought we'd start this conversation just by looking at what ESPN predicts and their power index ranking, which takes into account kind of how the teams have performed statistically to this point, their schedule moving forward, et cetera, et cetera. It does not notably take into account injuries, which
right.
are, obviously a big part of the picture for a lot of these teams. But let me just kind of read these off to you, Zach. San Antonio actually leads the Western Conference projections in terms of most likely to win the title, which I think is interesting.
Because they've got a historic point differential right now.
Right.
Which is amazing, considering what the Warriors have done.
Right. So the Warriors have two losses
yeah.
and are still not the favorites to win the title.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. Now, the Warriors are expected to win the Western Conference regular season
yes.
at 70 wins, 70-12, not quite 72-10,
but
for what
it's
worth.
Would be the second team to win 70 games, which is still...
It's still
that's
something.
Not bad.
Yeah.
I'd take that.
Yeah. Warriors fans would probably take that at the beginning of the season. And then San Antonio's number two there with 66 wins. Oklahoma City, 55 wins. The Clippers, 52 wins are your top four. Then it gets a little bit fuzzy with Memphis and Dallas at 43 wins, and Houston and the Jazz making the playoffs despite having records underneath 500 with only 40 wins.
Right.
Going down further down in the Western Conference standings, Sacramento 35 wins, as well as Portland, New Orleans 33 wins, Denver 30, Phoenix 30, Minnesota 26, and the Lakers rounding off the Western Conference with 19.
19 sounds high.
Yeah.
That sounds like an extra amount of wins for them.
Yeah, I mean, I can you see them winning? I could see them winning 11 more games, I guess, right?
I don't know. Are we counting scrimmages in practice?
Maybe,
I think it's a tie.
Yeah, I mean, all of these projections are pushed towards a mean. That's why it's actually kind of incredible that the Warriors are still projected
right.
to win 70. Okay, my initial thoughts, first of all, is this would be the first time in a long time that the West would have two playoff appearances by teams under 500.
Right.
You know, a 40 win season for the Jazz at this point seems about right given the injuries that they've had. But then now we look at getting Derek Favors back probably sometime this week and Rudy Gobert returning to the rotation. There's some information that the record projection stat computer doesn't know about the Utah Jazz and some of these other teams moving forward too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you would have to look at that as even if it's under 500, you almost get in by default. As long as you get in and you get that experience, even if it's only four games against the Warriors or whatever it's going to be, you know, I think that you look for that. Like the Jazz will certainly take that. They'll certainly feel like they're probably ahead of schedule because whenever you talk to them, it's a lot of developmental, like, heavy jargon that they're throwing out there. I mean, I don't think they're not expecting to make the playoffs. I just don't think that that's their priority as much as developing the players to develop really a culture.
Yeah, and it's funny. Like, I think the players want the playoffs. Certainly, you know, Rudy Gobert said the playoffs is our goal for this season.
Right.
But if you talk to the front office people or even Quinn Snyder, they're so focused on the long term that, you know, the record doesn't really matter, which I think has been really helpful for the Jazz as they've lost a number of games that have been very, very close down the stretch. You know, you miss a free throw. Rodney Hood misses the free throw to tie the game. Rodney Hood misses a potential game-winning three-point shot.
Noticing a trend here.
I mean, so Rodney Hood, if Rodney Hood is slightly better at basketball,
right,
the Jazz have, what, three more wins? I don't know. I think that sort of perspective is good.
I think it's interesting too that there doesn't really seem to be much competition for this 8 seed. I mean, right now it's what, 1.5-2 games between them and the Kings, maybe the Blazers are half game behind that. But to finish 5 games ahead of the 9 seed, that shows a bit of a cushion. It shows that there really is separation between them and the other contenders for that playoff spot.
Yeah, so right now they're 2 games ahead of the Kings, but you're right that if you look at the point differentials and whatever else, that the Jazz are significantly better than the Kings. And I think you look at the kind of like talent levels and really maybe the dumpster fire that has been the Kings at the end of the season for the last 6 years.
Yeah.
That's a kind of a reasonable call. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. And actually, this gets us into our next question from @basketballmusings. Asking what the Jazz's chances would be against the top 4 teams in round 1. He asked if they get fully healthy and play like last year at the end of last year defensively.
End of last year defensively is quite a team.
Right. If they play like that, that's a 94.8 defensive rating team. So that's the best or second best defensive team in the league.
Right.
And play 105 offensive rating offense, you know, a top 10 offense in the league.
That's
a team that can beat everybody but the Warriors and the Spurs.
Right, which, unfortunately, it looks like they're right, headed towards a matchup with the Warriors and the Spurs.
But I don't see them coming together like that. You know?
But
the odds of that are pretty
crazy. Let's
say
they did, though.
Okay.
Do you think they take a game against the Spurs and or the Warriors? I still don't. And I don't think that's a knock on them. I just think that that's how good these teams are. Like, we saw an okay Pelicans team push the Warriors at times during that series last year, but it was still a 4-0 sweep.
Right.
I think you would see a couple of very close games.
Yeah. No, but I do too. I think you would see a couple of close games, and it'd be kind of a coin flip whether or not the Jazz would win one of them, you know? The Jazz did beat the Warriors kind of during that run at the end of last season. So it's not impossible, and certainly they would not be favored. You know, the question is kind of whether it's a 4-game sweep or a 5-game series.
Right,
it's not that big of a deal, but truthfully, actually, I wrote this down. I think the Warriors and the Spurs beat everyone else in the league in 5 games, right? You know, you look at like a Spurs-Thunder series, and I don't know, probably Vegas' favorite is that goes 5, maybe 6? Like,
yeah, I mean, I think 6 would probably be pushing it.
Yeah, those two teams are by far the class of the league.
Right. Yeah, so I think that ideally you'd like to see the Jazz, if you're a Jazz fan, get into that 6 seed, but there is quite a bit of work to be done in order to do that. But if they're playing at that level that they were at the end of last season,
right?
And I mean, they'd have to leap one, a Houston team that is all over the place, speaking of dumpster fires, and two, a Memphis team that we don't know that's honestly that good.
Right. Well, and I mean, they're not that far out of it, right? They're 4.5 games out of 5 and the Dallas Mavericks, and they're three games behind the Memphis Grizzlies.
Right.
And you look at the upcoming schedule, and you know the next eight games are not going to determine how the Jazz do. But you look at how the Jazz's next 2 weeks looks, and they've got at Portland Wednesday tomorrow. That's a winnable game.
Winnable.
Home against the Kings,
Very winnable.
Home against the Lakers, winnable.
Yes.
At Charlotte.
Charlotte's kind of a mess right now.
Yeah, I mean they're not playing defense. Yeah. I mean they're.
Kemba Walker's been really bad over the last 15 games.
So that's pretty winnable. I think they'll still be without Al Jefferson
at
that point.
Out. I think he's still out for a few weeks.
So you've got that. Then you play at Knicks, which is
Knicks
a hard
just
game.
Got back to 500 away. I'd probably give the Knicks the edge there, but still winnable.
Yeah, at Brooklyn,
definitely winnable.
And at Washington, again, probably you'd give the nod to Washington as a favorite there, but the Wizards are still under 500. They actually, I believe they have the same record as the Jazz do right now.
Yeah, Bradley Beal, I believe, is due back this weekend.
Okay.
John Wall was getting an MRI today. I think there's some kind of infection with Marcin Gortat. I mean, they're as injured as a lot of teams, and they can definitely be susceptible to losses at home.
Right.
They've not been very good.
So you look at the next, I guess, 7-8 games, and you can kind of see a path for the Jazz to move up to the 5-6 seed. And then it gets really interesting to me. I mean, again, you would still probably take the Oklahoma City Thunder and Los Angeles Clippers as favorites against the Jazz, but just kind of looking at how the Jazz have performed against the Thunder and the Clippers since then, Jazz are 1-3 since the Cantor trade against Oklahoma City. I think they'd struggle. I think that's probably a 5 or 6 game series. But if you look at how they've played against the Clippers, they're 1-1 since the Cantor trade. I mean, I'm not saying two games means anything really, but with how the Clippers have played recently, maybe they figure it out by the end of the season, but maybe they don't.
Yeah, I mean, they've run off like 9 in a row, but it's been a weird 9 in a row. It's without Blake Griffin. I'm still not buying this bench. I'm not sure I'm buying DeAndre Jordan as a defensive anchor. I'm not even sure that I'm buying Doc Rivers as like not saying he doesn't know what he's doing, but being a guy that you think like, yep, he's definitely going to help the Clippers in a playoff series. Like we haven't seen a whole lot of that over the last couple of years.
He's not really like an out-coached another coach kind of guy. He's,
like I would still take the Clippers.
Yeah.
Like even like Jazz move up to the 5 seed, they're playing really well. But I think it goes 7.
Yeah.
At least 6. Like, I think that could be a real competitive series.
Yeah, and I think the Jazz are again, healthy, well-suited to match up against the Clippers. You know, Derek Favors guarding Blake Griffin. Good defensive point guards, ideally, to guard. And heck, maybe you get Dante Exum back. Probably not, but regardless.
Yeah.
To guard Chris Paul. Rudy Gobert and DeAndre Jordan. There are some interesting matchups there. And then you add in Gordon Hayward, Alec Burks being back. And, of course, Jazz struggled with J.J. Redick last time, but we're talking about an actually competitive series.
Yeah, I think it could be very interesting.
And for Jazz fans, that's not something that we've talked about in a long time.
Right.
So,
but at the same time, you still have to keep building. You still have to remain, you know, keep getting healthy. And this is kind of the mark of whether or not you're actually a good team is, can you win this stretch of winnable games? It doesn't mean you have to sweep through the next 6 games. Like that's not going to be what proves that you're good, but you probably need to win at least 4 of those games.
Yeah.
And that's what a good team would do. And if we think the Jazz are a good team, which I think they are when healthy, that's what they would do.
Yeah, no, and I agree. You look at them potentially getting Favors back soon, and from what I hear, he is rapidly improving, was considered to go for the Lakers game, and you know they kind of waited, let's wait a couple of extra days just to see how this heals completely. But, this looks like a stretch of games that, if you're sure many of them are on the road, but if you don't win at least 4, 5 is probably what you're shooting for.
Yeah.
6 or 7 would be great.
Be ideal, yeah.
Okay. So I think, and we'll keep talking about that too. We've got another question from another fan that we'll talk about in the 8 o'clock hour about, you know, kind of what a trade acquisition, for example, would do to those sort of chances.
Right.
Another kind of random topic, this one is from Michael England, at M_England83. Is it a coincidence that Rodney Hood and Gordon Hayward have played better since Alec Burks went down? I would, first of all, quibble with the premise.
Right.
You look at their per 36 numbers, Hayward scored 1 more point per game, but gotten 0.3 fewer assists and rebounds, and shooting about the same percentages. Rodney Hood has scored more, but has done it on less good percentages, which tells me that he's getting more opportunities because the ball's in his hands more often.
Right.
So I don't know that he those two players have played better since Alec Burks went down.
Well,
at least not offensively.
Right. I would say that it is a coincidence, even if we accept the premise that they have played better in his absence, because isn't that kind of what's supposed to happen? I mean, a player goes down, guys step up.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the mantra of every team. It's always, you always hear, if a team has injuries and they win a game, they're going to start, you know, banging the drum of next man up has to step up and be ready and blah, blah, blah. And so I would say that instead of looking at this stretch and saying, oh, Alec Burks went down and the Jazz, you know, started getting a little bit more successful, I would look at that as, you know, a positive towards the team building the development rather than like a, oh, maybe we don't need Alec Burks.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I would say that, you know, next man up doesn't really make sense for the star player on the team. You know, like
right.
Gordon Hayward
right,
is
right.
not the next man up. He's yeah. been there the whole time. But I don't think he's played any better. So, you know, it's,
yeah.
it's there's
I
that.
I mean, he's had a couple of really good games this week.
Right.
Which I think you would expect him to do whether Burks was there or not.
Right. I mentioned this earlier, actually, on this station, ESPN 700. I was on with Tom Kirkland's show, and he asked me, you know, why is Gordon Hayward playing better recently? And I think really the biggest reason that we've seen the last two games, particularly this weekend, is that teams are just we're not loading up against him, or at least the two teams that the Jazz played over the weekend, the Heat and the Lakers, were not loading up against him the way the teams did earlier in the week.
Right.
They weren't sending traps on pick and roll to get the ball out of his hands and into Trevor Booker or Trey Lyles' hands. And as a result, Hayward was a lot more effective.
Well, I think you also see it, too, with that's the effect of Rudy Gobert on the court is, one, he's a very good screen setter. Two, he moves the ball pretty decently within the flow of the offense.
Mm.
And three, he rolls really hard to the basket.
Yeah.
And teams respect that, and teams don't want to be on a poster, and they don't want to give up that big, you know, rolling down the middle, getting the dunk, or getting to the free throw line or whatever, unless they're a bad free throw shooter. And so because of that, that naturally sucks the defensive focus in those plays away from Gordon Hayward. And you saw him against the Heat, and one, Hassan Whiteside's a horrible pick-and-roll defender, so that helps.
Right.
But you see that is that when you can get into those situations, Gordon Hayward knows how to pick those apart.
Yeah, I think basically Gordon Hayward's making the right sort of plays.
Yeah.
It's just whether or not his compatriots on the floor are able to finish them off.
And sometimes shots just fall.
Right.
Right.
That's true. Yeah. And I think we saw a lot of that during his 18-point quarter in Miami. You know,
yeah.
He took, what, 9 or 10 mid-range shots, and 8 or 9 of them fell. And sometimes that happens, and sometimes it doesn't happen.
Right,
and
exactly.
We're all talking about what a bad game he had or whatever. I will say, though, that it is interesting to me that the Jazz's record without Alec Burks has been better. Just the record has been better. 5-4 since Alec Burks' injury so far this year. The Jazz were 12-16 with him. And then you look at last year, they were 29-26 without Alec Burks in 2015, and then 9-18 with him. So again, kind of going above 500, from below 500 to above 500 without him. Obviously, context changes a lot of that,
yeah.
Right? Like last year,
who you're playing,
Enes Kanter.
Right, yeah. Who's on the team?
Was on the team and kind of, you know, I don't know. Whatever bad defense metaphor you can throw out there.
He's like a saloon door.
Yes.
There's no resistance. Everyone's just going in and out as much as they want.
Right. But I do think that there is something to Burks not being the world's best defender. He's not the world's
sure.
smartest defender. I think you do probably get an upgrade when you go from Burks to even someone like Chris Johnson, for example, who
yeah.
probably provides you some more steals and a little bit more energy. It's just kind of whether or not, in the end, Burks is a net positive or a net negative?
I mean, I would think he's probably neutral right now. I would expect most guys, like I would expect Rodney Hood to be a neutral net positive.
Yeah.
Just because youngish guys still developing, still finding the role on a pretty young core. I don't know. I think I look at it as just like, small sample.
Yeah.
There's a lot of noise in these
numbers. It's
not
worth freaking out about yet.
Yeah. I would think you also look at, you know, Rudy Gobert missed a lot of those games where
right.
Alec Burks was playing, and Rudy Gobert is one of the most important
player.
Players on this team, this team, you know? So like, that's going to affect the record. Whereas, you know, the last couple of games, Gobert's back and, oh, by the way, they climb above 500 without Alec Burks.
I do think that Alec Burks is not quite like a member of the core. You know, he's not
okay.
Gordon Hayward, Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert.
Right. Basically. Yeah. He's in that next tier.
He's in that next tier. And I do think that, you know, that kind of does make him, movable if you did get something in return.
Yeah, I don't think he's untouchable.
Right.
I just think that I don't know. I like I like the move of him this year to the six-man role. Mm-hmm. I think guys like that who can create shots, who can kind of create a little bit of chaos in that six-man role, that's the type of guy I like in that role. And so I think that he projects to be kind of perfect for it as long as he stays healthy and keeps improving.
Agreed. Yeah, and I'm always, let me ask you this. When you're kind of evaluating where a player is, are you looking at the number of seasons he's played, or are you looking at what age he is? You know, so like Alec Burks is 24 years old. This is his fifth NBA season. Obviously, he's out right now with the ankle injury. But at what point do you say Alec Burks is kind of, he is who he is at this point?
Yeah, I mean, probably like right after that rookie contract.
Okay.
I think is usually with guys.
So we're
like,
at actually about that time.
About that time, yeah. I think usually with guys like rookie contract, I start thinking like, okay, this guy could still be here or be there, or be this as a player, or be that as a player. Once they get into that second contract and they're really starting to, you know, kind of show where they are as a player, I think, you know, I guess if we're going to put an age on it, it's like 25, 24, okay. 25, depending on when they come in the league, about year five or six in terms of experience. And really, like, you also have to factor in how many minutes they're getting in those years, right? Like, if you're a 14-minute-a-game guy, well, I don't really put a whole lot of stock into that. If you've been playing 25 minutes, you know, every year, or 25 minutes a game every year for the last 3 years, then you start feeling like you know more about that player.
Right, and you know, there are guys who have had that time and just have struggled with it for whatever reason. And at that point, yeah, I feel like you kind of know, you know, by the year four of Brandon Rush, we knew that he was not going to be like a superstar, or, you know, whatever the case might be. On the other hand, it's hard because, like, C.J. Miles, for example, another longtime Jazz man who ended up improving, you know, in his from the probably the biggest improvement in his career from, like, seasons 8 to 10.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know. It's
well,
hard.
He also, didn't he come out of high school?
Yeah, right.
You know, so that throws a lot, you know, a lot of noise into the mix. And I don't know, sometimes it's just about fit. Like, they could move Alec Burks to a team that uses him perfectly, and you would look at that trade and be like, what were they doing? But sometimes he wasn't going to be that player here, or he can't be that player somewhere else.
Right. We have one last request that I'm putting right before the break because I don't want to talk about it. Namely, at Menace Society UT says, fun with spreadsheets, how pivot tables, VLOOKUPS, and VBE will rock your world.
I don't know what any of that means.
That's just like,
I know what a table is.
Yeah, I am, let's be honest, I'm a nerd. Like, I've messed with Excel. I know what all of those things are, sadly. And
I know how to do an average in Excel.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about that, about that knowledge.
But the whole point is that we talk about sports, right? And
the
family listening around the dinner table is very upset that we're talking about Excel pivot tables right now.
Right.
They have turned the station to...
I didn't even know they could pivot. So that's, I figured pivot table was some type of post play or something.
It's like a lazy Susan with a spreadsheet.
Exactly.
All right, we're going to take a break. On the other side, we're going to be talking about the next Jazz man to have their number retired. That's another one of your fan requests coming up next on the Salt City Hoops Show on ESPN 700.
You're listening to Salt City Hoops on Utah's number one sports talk, ESPN 700.
All right, welcome back into the Salt City Hoops Show. Andy Larson, Zach Harper with you. SaltCityHoops.com, we are the ESPN True Hoop affiliate for the Utah Jazz, covering the Utah Jazz every day on SaltCityHoops.com. We're doing kind of a crowdsourced show today, just taking your questions all 2 hours of the show today from 8 until 10. The next one we're looking at right now, we did actually, by the way, get one from Riley O'Jazz, just barely asking about Zach's opinion on Dante Exum. We've got a whole section of Dante Exum
questions.
Yeah, we've
got like a Dante, that we're a Dante saving time.
Yeah, so that we're saving until 9 o'clock. So yes. Wait until then. But for now, we're going to be talking about the next Jazz man to have their number retired. That's from Classless Skip is his, I guess, handle, or at Tim Setterberg is the, I don't know. I get those confused. The name and then the
handle.
Yeah,
the handle's the at.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what do you call the Classless Skip part of his name?
I think that's just like nickname.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like
I'm gonna bet
Twitter pretty well.
But. I'm gonna bet his first name is not Classless. Like I'm.
That probably makes sense. By the way, later on in the show, we do have some excellent college basketball coach names.
I can't read any of them.
So I do. Yeah, actually, I should make John LaFollette, our producer, look up the pronunciations for those names during one of these breaks. Anyway, the next Jazz man to have their number retired. You kind of look at the history of the Jazz, and you've got kind of the Stockton and Malone, Hornacek years, and then you have the Darren Williams, Andre Kirilenko, Carlos Boozer, Mehmet Okur years. But honestly, I don't know that any four of those guys are going to be, in the end, impactful enough to have their jersey retired.
No, especially not with what they did here.
Right.
I guess maybe Kirilenko, if he gets into the Basketball Hall of Fame because of the international play, then
okay.
Maybe I could see a decision to jump on that money train that is Basketball Hall of Fame.
And, you know, I'm not sure that there should be another player wearing 47.
Right.
So, like, it's a pretty fungible number.
Yeah.
But.
Like, that's the only one, and that even feels
he also
feels
only made one All-Star game.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a great selection, but I don't know. Miami has Dan Marino's jersey
right.
up in the. It's not even in the rafters. It's on a wall.
Really?
In the back, yeah.
But you can't wear his number or?
Yeah. Well, no, I think you can wear his number. It's just they threw his jersey up
there
and it's next to Michael Jordan.
See, there was a lot of anger earlier on in the season, I think before you moved here, about the Garth Brooks banner
right.
in Vivint Arena.
I heard about that.
That the Jazz put up, or I guess Vivint Arena put up a banner celebrating that Garth Brooks did 4 sold-out shows in a row. And like,
yeah.
I think that kind of cheapens the rest of, like, John Stockton's up there.
It definitely does. I mean,
Garth Brooks is too. Like
the Lakers, all right. those banners, all of those retired numbers, all that greatness, and they have a Taylor Swift banner
right.
up there now.
That was where they. I talked to the mini Jazz people about this because, quite frankly, I was furious.
Sure, as one would be.
And they all said, well, the Lakers did it with T-Swift, so
I don't know that
we
that's
can do
a reason.
Garth Brooks. I'm like, no, that's like if, yeah, we retired Dan Marino's jersey or
yeah,
something.
Like, does he come back all that often?
No, that's the thing is, so the big reason why it sold out is because he hadn't been in Salt Lake for 20 years.
Okay.
So that's, you know.
Did Rihanna sell out? Because I know she's coming to town.
Presumably.
Okay.
Like, Bieber came last year.
You know what? If they put a Rihanna banner out. I take back all the criticism
okay
of the Garth Brooks
point?
Banner, yeah.
Yeah, just equal opportunity banner?
Yeah, like I think if you sell out a show, you should get a banner.
Get a banner.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. No, it's stupid. It's stupid that they put it up, first of all, next to the other things, and then that they kept it on a back wall is still stupid.
Yeah.
It's the worst. I've made fun of them constantly for us. Anyway. So, given that Darren and Andre and those guys aren't making it. Who is the next Jazz man to have their number retired?
I mean, all right.
Is it someone from this core?
So we're looking at someone from the. Are we assuming like there's not like a Greg Ostertag renaissance at some point?
Right.
Okay. So all right, no Greg Ostertag renaissance. Yeah, like I guess Gordon would be the most likely one.
So here's the thing: we talked about hit, you know, kind of where players' peaks are in the last segment. And we're like, you know, year 5, year 6 or so. He's in year 6 and hasn't made an All-Star game.
Right.
And, you know, is I guess, kind of close, but probably will make one or two. Probably not a lot of them.
Yeah.
It's still a questionable All-Star case. That's why I actually say Rudy Gobert. Like, you kind of see his game is such that.
See, I think it would be harder for him to make an All-Star game.
Why is that?
Because we're kind of going away from, like, liking big men.
Okay.
And so I just think that. I think his like he's never going to get voted in, right? Unless like France really gets their stuff together and like we just go full on like
right.
French Renaissance here. But I think it's going like I'm not saying he won't make any. I think it'd be hard for him to make an All-Star game like more times than Gordon Hayward.
Okay.
I think Gordon has especially as they get good, that stuff just kind of goes to like team leaders, guys who score a lot of points. Like,
yeah,
you know, like maybe he becomes a Marc Gasol in the eyes of the coaches around the league. I just also think like you've got Cousins out there, you've got Anthony Davis, you've got Blake Griffin. Like, you've got a lot of guys who are pretty young and are going to make a lot of All-Star teams.
See, from like a coaching perspective, I think Rudy Gobert is a more unique challenge,
right?
Compared to Gordon Hayward, right?
No, like, I agree with that.
And so. Maybe, you know, if you imagine a future Jazz team that's like a 2-3-4 seed in the West and they're very good, maybe Rudy Gobert is your biggest defensive challenge to solve. Coaches kind of realize that in kind of the same way they did with Marc Gasol and have him in the All-Star game.
Yeah, like I think if he's like a legitimate defensive player of the year candidate every year, eventually that breaks through. Marc Gasol is a pretty high standard to get to. I'm very big on Marc Gasol. Mm-hmm. I think you are as well. I guess if Rudy is getting to the point where he's blocking, you know, 3-4 shots a game and averaging 12-13 rebounds a game, and he does that for a couple of years, then maybe he can start getting into that mix. And then once you get, you know, a couple, as long as you're relatively young, then maybe you just start becoming that regular guy they put in there every year.
I might say that it is most likely that none of the current Jazz men...
What about Favors?
Again, you know, fifth, sixth-year player.
Because I think he could end up getting a lot more credit amongst the coaches than Gobert as this team becomes very good.
I just see, I guess, Favors as a mostly finished product and Gobert as a less than finished product.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to me, Favors took some pretty big leaps this year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is kind of unfair to Derek, for sure, based on how his game has improved in the last 6 months.
If he plays the Heat and Dwayne Wade every night, Chris Johnson, clearly.
Yeah. Chris Johnson can...
I think that's a lock.
Can have his... He wears 23, right? So...
Right.
It's perfect.
Well, all right. Like, Dante? I know it's very young and he's done almost nothing.
Dante, 6 PER guy, right? So we're not talking about someone who's put up a lot of talent or put up a lot of production,
right,
but has talent, and you could see, you know,
he's very young, he could be dynamic. He becomes a star in this league. Maybe 3 or 4 MVPs.
That's,
you know.
I mean, there's a real case to be made for Exum.
If Dante Exum gets 3 MVPs, I think he gets his number retired.
If he does get the 3 MVPs.
Yeah.
It's hard. I also kind of said Gobert to transition into this next question from @BasketballMusings. Why Gobert is freaking awesome. He wants us to talk about that.
Very.
I think, first of all, he makes highlight plays all the time. I think that's why he's kind of the most interesting Jazz player from an on-the-court perspective, from blocks to steals to cool passes like we saw against Miami on Saturday. I mean, a lot of kind of neat plays that get him on SportsCenter. So that's one reason to be freaking awesome. I also think that and I hear this from Jazz coaches a lot, that he chooses to work at his craft despite being 7 foot and having the wingspan and craziness. That he still works hard. He's not a Patrick O'Brien kind of guy.
Right.
He's
not Priest Lauderdale.
Right. He's
not playing because he's tall.
Right. He's someone who legitimately cares and wants to get better and works hard at it. And that's unique from someone with his unique physical proportions. Yeah.
There is a in the intro video, assuming everyone's seen the intro video in the arena, there's like a part where he's like an owl with a condor,
I think,
wingspan type of thing.
See, I'm going for like falcon or eagle.
Yeah, maybe it's a falcon. But like I'm really afraid of birds.
Okay.
It's just they're evil. They're evil creatures, and so I don't trust them. So like there is part of me like when I see that in there and you see the long wingspan, he's holding the basketballs and like he becomes a bird. Where I'm like, whoa, like that guy's scary.
Yeah.
So I think that maybe other people see that and they're like kind of freaked out by him. That's what makes him freaking awesome.
That's what makes him such a good rim protector, is that people just associate
they think he's
him
a bird,
with a literal bird.
Right. Exactly.
What are you gonna do?
Yeah.
I'm in. That sounds good.
Yeah.
Another question from Basketball Musings. I think we've got a couple more from him later on in the show, too. We've already answered 3 of his, but regardless. Our takes, we're saying yes to everything.
Yeah.
We have no choice in this matter.
You throw it out there, we'll answer it.
Our takes on playoff beards and what the writer/blogger equivalent of a playoff beard is.
All right, well, I have a beard, but it's not a good one.
Talking to Quinn Snyder about this.
Yeah.
He didn't think he could even grow your level of beard.
Right, and I even said, like, come on, you can do this. Like, this is nothing. And I keep it, you know, trimmed pretty tightly, just because if it gets like I can't get to a James Harden looking beard.
Right.
I'm not Trey Kirby, for those of you who watch the starters on NBA TV. Like I can't do anything like that, so I have to keep it kind of manicured. But I do appreciate those who can grow a beard like that. So I'm all for playoff beards, especially they used to do like the Pacers would shave their heads. in the 90s, and then you got like Rick Smits with a shaved head, and that was really like, I wouldn't mind teams going back to that.
Yeah, kind of weirdnesses.
Yeah.
I'm cool with that. I, you know, maybe playoff goggles.
Playoff goggles would be cool.
I think that could be. I mean, so many bloggers already have beards that it doesn't.
Right.
It doesn't work.
Yeah. I think like maybe, I don't know, maybe like grow out your hair.
Yeah.
Type of deal. Like no haircut. Type of playoff thing.
See, I think it's got to be like a changing your Twitter background sort of thing, where you're doing it in solidarity with your other Twitter people out there in a community, but you're doing it, you're changing it to like rainbows and lollipops.
Well, it's kind of like we when we found out that that Donald Sterling's a huge racist. Well, most of us knew this already, but
everyone else found out that
a lot of people went to like the black background, the black team logo kind of deal, like in a solidarity of getting Donald Sterling far away from the league. So yeah, I could see the avatar thing or the background thing really going.
I like it. Let's start it. If the Jazz make the playoffs this year, I'm doing something crazy.
Yeah.
I'll
bring the monocle back.
Bring the monocle back.
You know what? Maybe playoff monocles are the
playoff
way to go.
Playoff monocles. Yeah, okay. Everyone gets a monocle.
Yeah, they're $50. They're $50 at Warby Parker. They'll donate a pair of glasses.
Are they prescription monocles?
I'm sure you can get a prescription. I don't need it. Like my eyes are fine, so I don't need one.
I mean, I need one. Yeah. I mean, I'd need two, but
I guess you would need two.
I can squint, right? Squint with one eye and monocle with the other.
That's what they did in the olden days. Or they probably just got glasses.
People were too poor for two lenses. They only could get one.
I think it's a great idea. Playoff monocles.
All right. I'm now accepting playoff monocle gifts in the mail.
Yeah.
Send them to the ESPN 700 studios.
Really easy to do.
We got to take a break. Next up, we're talking about NBA coaches, top 10, and imagining what if they were on the worst top bottom 10 teams because, I don't know, someone told us to.
Someone asked.
That's next on the Salt City Hoops Show, ESPN 700.
Talking hoops and the association, this is Salt City Hoops on ESPN 700.
All right, welcome back into the Salt City Hoops Show. Andy Larson, Zach Harper with you. We're getting some debate in our Twitter notifications about whether or not birds are actually scary, like Zach says they are. Sporadic Regularity says birds are modern-day dinosaurs, so yeah, I can see why someone would be afraid of them.
Correct.
Meanwhile, At the Hype Jumper says the big ones are about as intimidating as a grapefruit, which I presume means not intimidating.
Okay, but if you had birds the size of wolves, we'd all be dead.
Yeah, no, they'd be like incredibly powerful, like claw creatures.
And they fly, and they have talons.
Yeah, if they wanted to, they could kill us all.
And all they want to do is murder stuff.
Imagine if they could like actually use tools, like, I don't know, bombs.
Exactly. You're telling me they can't figure that out? I've seen 24. I know what can be done.
It's happening.
There's a movie called Zootopia
where
they're basically humans. So now you put birds in that role?
If some bird sneaks into a movie theater and sees how it's done.
Oh, we can't. You've got to
high
beef
security.
Up the security. Yes. I know Straight Outta Compton had a lot of security. Like Zootopia needs way more security.
All right. Our next question on today's crowdsource show comes from @SnarkTank, Angie Treasure, KSL coworker of mine. And I don't appreciate her asking us this because this is a hard and weird question. She's asking us to reshuffle the current NBA coaches, but so we're going to be pairing the best 10 coaches in the league with the worst 10 teams in the league by record, and then which ones are the best fit.
See, I like this because I like chaos, and this provides
and this
a lot of chaos.
And this is very chaos. So yeah. Greg Popovich is no longer the coach of the Spurs. He has to be the coach of one of the 76ers, the Lakers, the Nets, the Pelicans, the Wolves, the Phoenix Suns, Denver Nuggets, Milwaukee Bucks, Portland Trailblazers, Sacramento Kings. Where do you want to send Greg Popovich, Zach?
You know what? I want him coaching DeMarcus Cousins. I think he could harness the power of Cousins.
I think you're right.
And Cousins would then just destroy the rest of the league.
Yeah. If he can't, then DeMarcus Cousins should just retire because no one will be able to.
Yeah, if Pop can't make it work, then...
Like how Jimmer Fredette should just retire because...
Because Pop couldn't make it
Pop
work.
Couldn't
make
it work.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, we will now unfortunately get just so much hate in all of our tweets. And
don't worry, we'll talk about the D-League soon enough.
Yes, soon. All right, Rick Carlisle then. I kind of see, let's alternate here.
Sure.
I like Rick Carlisle. I just think he's so good if you've got like good defenders and decent shooting.
Mm-hmm.
which I think the Blazers are.
Yeah, I like that.
So you put Rick Carlisle on the Blazers, I think he figures out a way to make them a playoff team. And that's nothing against Terry Stotts, who I think is a very good coach. I
love Terry Stotts.
But I think Rick Carlisle has shown that like he can make some really, really good schemes out of some kind of, I guess, pieces that aren't necessarily stars.
Raymond Felton has been productive this year. That's how good Rick Carlisle is.
All of their point guards have been.
Yeah.
It's...
Which is odd because Rick Carlisle actually always has a horrible relationship with his point guards.
Right, but they...
So giving him to Damian Lillard maybe is kind of cruel.
That's true.
All right, Mike...
Lillard might deserve better. Yeah, Mike Budenholzer.
Mike Budenholzer. I want to see Anthony Davis.
Okay.
With what Bud can do.
How do you envision that going?
It's like everything that Paul Millsap does, except like way more alien.
Okay.
So I think like you'd have to clear out a lot of what they have. But you throw AD out there with Ryan Anderson and go fill in the rest of the roster with guys that Mike Budenholzer, you know, knows how to coach and knows how to make productive. I think that they would just dominate the Western Conference in 2 years.
Yeah. Okay. I want Frank Vogel on the Suns.
Oh, I like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of aren't like a good version of the Suns, kind of trying what the Pacers are trying to be the four out sort of thing.
A lot of similarities. Like you could make a similarity between Monte Ellis, George Hill pairing and Brandon Knight, Eric Bledsoe in terms of just how they're used.
Yeah. I think it's a good fit. I think it'd be entertaining. I think Vogel would do a great job there. I'm in.
All right.
Brad Stevens.
I've seen Brad Stevens. Here's how to describe what he's doing with the Celtics this year. It's like watching an Ocean's 11 movie, but everybody's Scott Conn. So like they're pulling off these heists with 11 Scott Conns. So here's what so you take Brad Stevens' genius and you give him Andrew Wiggins and you give him Karl Anthony Towns and all the other young guys he can help mold, and you just watch him develop these guys. Because he's like doing it with like Kelly Olynyk and Jared Sullinger, who aren't any good.
Right.
So now give him Karl Anthony Towns and see what happens.
Amazing things,
yes.
Like mind-blowing things. Eric Spoelstra, and on the other end of the spectrum, I'm sending to the 76ers because they don't have any talent, and I want to see, like, he's had the most talent. Now
right.
What happens when he's sent to the least talent?
I like that. Steve Kerr would be next. Let's give him...
These coaches aren't in any order, by the way. I just threw them out there.
Let's give him the Bucks.
Okay.
I want to see what he can do with Giannis. Giannis,
yeah,
Jabari Parker, Chris Middleton, they've got like kind of the pace and space, switch everything on defense kind of ideals.
I mean, they have no shooting, right? So it would be the opposite of what they have in Golden State. But
yeah, it's just Chris Middleton.
Right.
Like, that's it. But he can go
maybe
get some guys.
Maybe they make something work.
Yeah.
All right, Quinn Snyder, I put him in the top 10 because, I don't know, in case they're listening and want to give me like trade rumors later.
Sure.
I think he's a good coach,
though. He's a very good coach.
I'm sending him, unfortunately, to the Denver Nuggets.
Oh,
which...
Yeah, that's not exciting.
No, it's not exciting, but we only have three teams left.
Yeah, all right.
I think he likes Danilo Gallinari, and so they get to be on the same team.
Sure.
Next up.
Doc Rivers gets to stay in the same city. He's going to the Lakers. Just because the Lakers fans have been crushing Doc Rivers since he took over the Clippers. Now I want to see what they say about him.
And that puts Stan Van Gundy with the Nets.
Oh, I like Stan, too. That's we got to redo this.
Stan is a great guy.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we'll be coaching the Nets as they suck for the next 5 years.
Van Gundy, Prokhorov, buddy cop
situation.
That has some promise.
That's the next Zach Harper produced movie.
Oh, my God. I've already written half of it.
By the way, we're going to talk about Prokhorov's quotes later today because they are...
He's amazing.
They are... I don't know. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
He's a caricature of himself at this point.
Yes.
It's incredible.
All right, we got to take a break. On the other side, more of your guys' questions. That's next on the Salt City Hoops Show. You're listening to it on ESPN 700.
Analytics and opinions on the Jazz and the rest of the NBA. This is Salt City Hoops on ESPN 700.
All right, welcome into the Salt City Hoops Show on ESPN 700. I realize now that our intros, now I am the analytics guy and you're the opinions guy.
I am the opinion.
That's,
yeah.
That's how
when I started
works.
Writing I made horrible business cards for myself, I put professional opinionist on
okay.
there. So, like, yeah, I feel comfortable as the opinions.
Not blogassist.
Not blogassist, no.
Who said blogassist again?
I think it was Dan Gilbert, who blocked me on Twitter.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, I mean,
this was during the lockout.
That?
I mean, I was being pretty rude. so I don't think it was unwarranted. But, yeah, I'm still blocked.
Okay. I like that. Yeah. Anyway, Andy Larson, Zach Harper, taking your requests today. It's an All Request Tuesday on ESPN 700. Basically, I tweeted out yesterday, here's what you guys want us to talk about, and you guys said all sorts of random things, and so we're talking about all sorts of those random things, from spreadsheets to what we're going to be talking about now, Dante Exum. We've got four different Dante Exum questions, which is pretty incredible given that the guy hasn't played all year, right? And like, no one's seen him. Nothing has changed with regards to Dante Exum over the last 3 months. He's still...
I saw him in the hallway before last game or the game before talking to Joe Ingles, which I don't know if he's like required to follow Joe around.
Yes.
But I only see them together.
My theory is that Joe Ingles is required to follow Dante Exum around.
Oh,
like that's why,
like bodyguard.
Yeah,
who just kind of gets to play.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who ends up playing more minutes?
Right.
But yeah, no, I think that's why Joe Ingles was signed in the first place, right? You know, Dante Exum was the no brainer pick, but now you need an Australian bodyguard to keep like poor little 19-year-old skinny Dante Exum safe.
Exactly. Yeah. So, like once he puts on some muscle. Then you feel good about him roaming, right? Then you feel good about him like roaming the streets of Salt Lake City.
Yeah, the dangerous
yeah,
the dangerous streets of Salt Lake. Well, I mean, now you've answered Adam Jack's first question at Atomics Rex. Talk about how Exum is doing. Well, he's walking around the halls of Vivint Arena.
I didn't see a limp.
The Zions Basketball Bank Basketball Center. Like, I'm always shocked, and honestly I haven't seen him limp for like 2 months.
Yeah,
so I want him to just get out on the court like tomorrow, you know, like you're not limping, play basketball. What's wrong with that? And then that's just not how it works.
Yeah, I've had a serious knee injury before, and I stopped limping, you know, after a couple of months, but nowhere near a basketball court for quite a while.
And I've seen him like at practice kind of doing dribble drills and that sort of thing. So they're having him do that, and he's taking like kind of standing free throws, basically.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, there's still a long ways to go. Dante Exum has been told that he's not returning at all this season, so that, you know,
I think
he
it's
doesn't
smart.
Start like, getting excited.
I get the push of like, all right, well, maybe he's healthy, maybe he's doing okay, and the Jazz are really good. They could use an extra push. There is a long-term projection here that the Jazz are much more concerned with. I think that's smart. I was very wary of when the Pacers brought Paul George back for six games last year. It obviously ended up being an okay move because he didn't get hurt and he's really good. But I do think like it's okay to be too cautious in that.
Do you think it ended up giving Paul George any extra confidence or anything going into the season?
I think it probably did because you get over the. You get over the worry about coming back and getting hurt again and stuff like that. And while he didn't play a lot, I do think that does help mentally.
See, and I think for Dante Exum, that period will be in the Olympics.
Right.
Right? So you don't have to do that in NBA game time. You can do that in the Olympics with the Australian national team.
Yeah, and I think as long as you get him in some kind of competitive environment before they get back there, you're probably okay.
And you know, probably playing the best players in the world anyway. You know, you're going to be seeing the U.S. national team or France or whoever you end up playing, Germany. Well, you'll probably end up playing NBA level players anyway. So it's like really a big jump up.
Yeah. Shout out to Atomic or Adam Jack as well, because he tweeted me and said, Golden Eagles hunt deer and goats. They're called Raptors for a reason. So he's agreeing with me on this dangerous
that they're scary
thing. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, good for him. Thanks, Adam. Next Dante Exum question. Haven't asked for Zach's opinion on Dante Exum ceiling. How good do you guys think Exum can eventually be?
Yeah, it's tough for me to kind of project that just because I don't know what kind of an offensive player he's going to be.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if he's actually a point guard, if he's an off guard, or he's, you know, the combo guard type, or what he can actually do with the basketball in his hands. I love his potential defensively. I think he could be a special defender.
I think he's already been a very good defensive point guard just
with
from what we saw last
year.
Yeah, as a rookie, as a super skinny, non-strong rookie.
I like his attitude, too, because I was talking to him at the All-Star weekend in New York, and we were at some, I don't know, Adidas thing. I was trying to like carefully and respectfully say, like, hey, you came out of nowhere. And all of a sudden you're this really big deal in the NBA draft. I said, well, you didn't really come out of nowhere. He's like, no, it's okay. I came out of nowhere. You can say it. Like, I like that, you know, kind of self-deprecating, like, very real about it. So I think that you can take an attitude like his, you can take a work ethic like his, and as long as he stays healthy, I think you can project pretty high things for him. I mean, I think he definitely projects to be a starter, which sounds maybe very basic to people, but not everyone in this league projects to be a starter, no. Even as a talented prospect.
No, and that's nice to see. I think it, from what I've seen of Dante Exum, and you know that's basically his games last year, I think he absolutely is a point guard in terms of that. You know, every time he approached the paint last year, he was looking to pass rather than finish, to the frustration of a lot of Jazz fans who were told about this, like, kind of almost Russell Westbrook-esque, like, speed and finishing machine. And it just wasn't that. Instead, he was a passing and defense guy. He was like a Howell Netto, right? Like, in terms of production. And it's... So I think it makes sense that long-term he's a point guard. I think long-term he can be a very good point guard. I agree, like, the offense is a big question there. But if you're that good defensively, then you're a starter on a good level team, kind of almost no matter what.
Right, and, like, maybe, like, even if he ends up being a bigger Ricky Rubio, where the shot doesn't come around and you question some of the scoring, but obviously not the passer Ricky Rubio is, but he can be kind of in that mold of player of, like, set up the offense, be a terror on defense. If you get a bigger version of that with probably a better jumper, because that doesn't take a whole lot, like, that's a really good player.
Yeah.
And that's a really good player for this Jazz organization to have. So I don't know. I'm very high on him. I like his attitude. I like the work ethic. I like everything I've heard about him. Obviously, I have to see more on the court, but the little I've seen, I like.
Joseph Horner asks, would love opinions on if Exum's timetable really matches up with the rest of the Jazz or if they need to speed things up.
That's tough.
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of looking at, like, so sure, last year was Dante Exum's rookie season, and, you know, again, like a 7 PER kind of guy.
Yeah.
But you kind of, he is able to do some skill development things during this year. But yeah, I mean, you're looking at kind of year two of Dante Exum as Gordon Hayward's in his seventh year, and Derek Favors is in his seventh year, and Alec Burks is in his sixth year. And you know, these other guys are kind of peaking, right, as the Jazz really need Dante Exum to be a kind of a good starter right away, quite frankly, right?
Sure, yeah, to some degree. I also think that this builds up better sustainability.
Yeah.
To have that kind of staggered. And that, like, that's almost kind of the goal. Like, you don't want five guys in the same draft, you know, to all build together. Like, that can create problems, one, from a cap situation, and two, it's difficult to manage that. Whereas if you put him around guys like Favors and Hayward, and even an improving Gobert, there's less pressure on him to get it right immediately, and there's more of a cushion in what he can learn, and you get a better perspective on the guys around him teaching him.
Yeah.
So I actually think it works out better that he's, you know, further behind than got, you know, their peers and their contemporaries, because this builds much better sustainability for the long-term projection of the team.
That's a good point. You know, like, looking at the Blazers, for example, like, even if LaMarcus Aldridge leaves, you still have Damian Lillard.
Right.
Even if Gordon Hayward, Derek Favors leave, you still have Dante Exum and Rudy Gobert, basically.
Right, exactly, yeah.
So, yeah, I can totally see where you're coming from there. I do think that it delays the timetable in terms of, like, contention success for this team,
sure,
right? Like,
yeah. The knee injury is not ideal, and that delays things even further, but with what he can do, I think that you can get him up to speed by the time that team becomes really good and he actually ends up pushing them over, you know, over the hump.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of look at, like, the 08 Boston Celtics, where you have rookie or second year Rajon Rondo,
right,
and then great players around him. You know, they great player, or Tony Parker with the Spurs in the early days. I mean, same kind of thing. If you have good enough players on the rest of the roster, you can have a talented rookie point guard kind of grow with that group.
Exactly.
And it's obviously not the worst thing in the world. You
can
win a championship that way. Now, obviously, Hayward, Favors, Gobert are not Tim Duncan, are not Kevin Garnett, but are still good players that could bring Exum along in that sort
exactly.
of way. Do the Jazz spend another year with the same core next year, since the Alec Burks and Dante Exum injury kind of put a question mark into certain things this year? What do we upgrade? This question from @CaseyGreer2.
I don't get the sense from this organization that they're in a rush to make huge splashes.
No.
So,
the opposite.
I think you get... You know, you could maybe argue at some point they may be too careful, and you know, have too much of a plan and not really adjust to it. But if they believe in the plan and you can see that plan is something where, you know, you can actually see a light at the end of the tunnel in that respect, yeah, I don't think it's that big of a deal to have them spend another year with the same core.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's the thing is, you know, maybe you add someone to the core. You know, you're probably looking at getting a late teen sort of pick, so you're probably getting that in your core.
Sure.
Or maybe you make a trade for a young player to add to that core. But ultimately, I don't think there are going to be any takeaways from that core. You know, I don't think they're trading Alec Burks. I don't think they're, you know, looking to trade like Dante Exum or anything like that. Sort of
right.
Thing.
Yeah. I think if a trade presented itself where they were like, well, all right, we're shaking up the core, but this is going to help us build over the next 5 years. Mm. I think they would take that. But at the same time, like, I don't know that guy's out there.
Yeah, no, that's the thing is, like, you kind of need someone who makes sense long-term, not just short-term.
And we're never going to have we've never had an offseason like this coming up where everybody has cap room, everything's changing, the financial landscape is changing in such dramatic ways that I think having a conservative approach to that offseason is actually pretty smart because you get to see the mistakes of the other teams.
Yeah, and there aren't that many great free agents out there anyway.
Yeah,
you know?
Like,
so
once Kevin Durant decides to re-sign, and once Al Horford decides what he's going to do, like, there's a pretty big drop-off.
Right.
And you're not going to go get Rajon Rondo.
Right. So there are 27 teams who could conceivably have a max next season.
Yeah.
And, you know, five-ish players that probably deserve it.
Like, maybe you go after Nick Batum?
Mike Conley?
Yeah, like, if you could go get Mike Conley, I think you do that. But, you know, this isn't exactly a free agency destination. So
how are you convincing Mike Conley to sign here?
Right. Like, why are you, how are you
besides
getting,
kidnapping him?
Exactly.
Which, now that,
you know,
that's on the table.
Not a bad plan. I've seen worse. I actually think that was David Kahn's ideal situation with a lot of free agents when it came to Minnesota Timberwolves was kidnapping.
Was just to kidnap
him. Just to kidnap him. Yeah. So I guess, you know, fingers crossed that could work.
Seems good.
But how are you convincing Mike Conley that, like, no, you should leave Marc Gasol in Memphis to come here?
Right.
You know, that's a tough sell.
I mean, you can say, sure, age, right? You know.
Yeah. It's not that this would be a bad decision. Is it such a good decision for Mike Conley that he's going to give up what he has there or at maybe a bigger contender?
And in particular, yeah, is it the best decision he can
make,
right? Like, it's I could see the Jazz being in Mike Conley's, like, top seven choices, but top one, probably not.
That's a hard sell.
Yeah.
And then outside, like, are you going to throw $25 million a year at DeMar DeRozan?
No.
I wouldn't.
No. No.
Yeah, I mean, he's a nice player, but that's not changing this franchise.
No, and it's not, I don't think that fits into Quinn Snyder's system especially well. So, yeah, I mean, and Quinn Snyder, by the way, loves Mike Conley. Like, loves Mike Conley.
How could you
but
not?
It's
he's
just
amazing.
Whether or not
he's
Mike really, Conley would
does
want
he love,
to come
love,
here.
Love Quinn Snyder?
Right.
Enough.
Yeah. And maybe Quinn Snyder's playing the long game with saying nice things about Mike Conley in the press.
Yeah, if Quinn Snyder's not willing to grow a beard, Mike Conley has a beard.
Bearded people have to stick together? Is that your point?
Generally what happens.
So Mike Conley will sign here if Quinn Snyder grows a beard.
Quinn's got to get on this beard thing. Or playoff monocle.
Just do something.
Yeah.
This kind of brings me actually into the next two requests from people, which is crazy trade ideas. Everyone loves the crazy trade idea of the week segment that we occasionally do on the show. That's from @TeamMunson1985, real name Travis, or at least nickname Travis.
Maybe nickname.
And @Chris, again, @SquaredK2, both asking for trade ideas. I think it kind of makes much more sense if you are looking at some way to add or improve or change this core to make it in a trade rather than from a free agent signing point of view.
Right, yeah. That's generally what the small market teams do is they have to go get trades.
Especially because the Jazz have cap space right now that they can use, whereas, you know, right in the summer, everyone will have cap space.
Right,
right now, the Jazz having cap space is, while not rare, at least some teams do, you know?
Yeah.
So two trade ideas then. Well, we're making the fans happy. One is this Joffrey LeVern idea that I got from jazzfans.com. It's a Jazz message board.
Okay.
I kind of like it. Like,
One, he looks a lot like a Plumlee brother, and I'm really trying to get this Kilometers Plumlee nickname to stick with it.
For Joffrey LeVern. Kilometers Plumlee.
Miles
Plumlee.
Yeah, he's French.
Kilometers Plumlee. I love it.
And if he is in the city, I feel like I have a better chance of making that work.
So he just turned 24 years old.
Yeah.
And I agree. I've made jingles work.
Yeah.
I didn't come up with jingles like you came up with Kilometers
Plumlee. You said it to Quinn the other day, and he knew it right away.
Yeah. He made fun of me for that once. And then I've felt like I have full reign to use it from here on out. I'm a little bit afraid to actually use it in front of Jingles himself.
But all right, you talk to Rudy, locker next to Jingles.
Yeah, I
would just see if he notices it, and maybe he jumps on board.
I think he would. Yeah.
He's a fun guy.
I'm pretty sure I've referred to Jingles as Jingles in front of Rudy and Gordon and those guys, and they're like, yeah, they know.
Yeah.
And honestly, Joe Ingles gives them enough crap that any kind of weird nickname.
I swear, I've never seen a teammate talk more trash to his teammates in pre-game warmups,
especially
than Jingles.
For a 11th man on the roster,
right? And it's
right?
And it's everybody. Yeah. Everybody is in his sights at all times.
Anyway, so I like Kilometers Plumlee for Joffrey Laverne, but he's also only 24 years old. He's a shooting big, which the Jazz don't have at all, and it's something that I know that Quinn Snyder and Dennis Lindsay and the staff would like, is someone who can shoot from the outside. He's kind of been surplus to requirements so far in Denver. As Nurkic has come back, he's had a few did not play coaches' decisions. He's played under. So in the last five games, he's had two DNP CDs and then has played a combined 30 minutes in the other three games. So not a big factor overall.
Yeah, they've got Jokic, they've got Nurkic, they've got Kenneth Faried, Daryl Arthur. They're crowded up there.
Yeah. So he's someone who's potentially go-gettable.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of put out there what would you trade him for? What does that trade kind of look like? And Smooth Hoops, Justin Faudry responded to me on Twitter and said, how about the Oklahoma City first round pick that the Jazz got in the Enes Kanter deal last year for Joffrey Laverne? I think that's not a bad trade, right?
I think Laverne's really good.
I think he is, too. You look at what he did in France next to Rudy Gobert this summer. I think that those two players can even play together, which is that's kind of the question, right? Because he's played most of his minutes at center.
Right.
So if you're getting a backup for Rudy Gobert, meh, right? You probably don't spend a first-round pick on him. But if you can play someone next to Rudy Gobert as someone who could maybe develop into a third big, then yeah, that's probably worth that asset expenditure.
Yeah, and if he can play next to Gobert, you know he can play next to Favors. He's actually the type of big man you would like Trey Lyles to become.
Yeah.
In theory. So I think it's a great fit, and I don't think that OKC first-round pick is giving up too much.
No, I mean, that's the kind of pick that it can turn into two second-round picks down the road. Probably won't. Probably will end up being a late first-round pick. But, it's protected, so you're not giving up anything with a lot of upside. And I think Joffrey Laverne has probably more upside than the kind of players that you'd expect to get out of that pick. So I like that deal. I don't know. Justin Faudry, like I said, writes for the Denver True Hoop blog, so I feel like he can represent Nuggets fans' wishes.
I think the deal's done.
Made a trade.
I think the trade's done.
Well, I'm submitting it to
the league office
right now. We can make this
done out. Deal.
Can you sound convincingly like someone in the Nuggets front office? I can do a Dennis Lindsay impersonation.
I mean, I can make my voice a lot deeper.
Okay,
I could sound more I could sound more grown up than I do.
Perfect.
Yeah,
we're in. All right. Now that we've gotten one deal done,
let's do another one.
Second one. This one's from Real GM, everyone's favorite basketball message board. Kings. This is a deal between the Jazz and the Kings, where the Kings would acquire Alec Burks and one of Trey Burke or Howell Neto, and the Jazz would get Darren Collison and Ben McLemore.
Ooh, this is intriguing. All right, full disclosure, I thought Ben McLemore was going to be amazing coming out of Kansas.
And I think that time has passed.
Yeah, I'm willing to sell on that. But he could be a very good rotation player.
Here's what I've been told about Ben McLemore. He can't dribble, shoot, or pass.
Those are typically things you would like a shooting guard to be able to do, at least one of them.
And we're in year three of the Ben McLemore experience, and
here's where I would be cautiously optimistic about him.
Okay.
That Kings organization is a mess.
That's true.
And so trying to find some consistency when you're not a great player in that environment, I think is pretty tough. And so you bring him to a much more structured environment that actually cares about player development. I think you could maybe see a big jump. Now, I don't know if it's a big enough jump to say like, hey, this guy's someone you want for the next 10 years.
Right.
But I think you could get enough of a jump to figure out if he can actually play. And getting Darren Collison, like, I think Darren Collison would be pretty good in the system.
I do too. Has anyone gone out of the Kings system and like done really well? I'm trying to think.
No, because they keep drafting terrible players. Like,
yeah, I think
Nick Stauskas, Jason Thompson,
right.
Jimmer Fredette.
Right.
They keep getting really bad players, and so there's not like this, all right, now they're free, now they can go.
Because they're just kind of bad.
Yeah, because they're just targeting bad players.
But
which
you
is
don't
a weird
think Ben McLemore is that. You think he's like, he can be.
I think
average-ish.
He's salvageable.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're right that Darren Collison is absolutely the prize of this deal for the Jazz. You know, as a good point guard, someone who would absolutely add wins now, probably next season could. And then his contract runs out after the 2016-17 season. So it's kind of perfect to have, like, Dante Exum ascend into the starting role. And
you can play him, like, Darren Collison is someone who plays very well next to other point guards.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't consider that. So, yeah, I mean, heck, we're seeing Trey Rourke, Howell, Neto minutes right now.
Which is
weird.
Not ideal, also.
Right. So Darren Collison next to someone minutes would be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I like Darren Collison. I think I like Darren Collison more than Jazz management does, honestly, in like my conversations about Darren Collison. He's 28.
Ideally, you'd want him as a backup point guard.
Right.
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 So him as a starter is not great, but if Exum comes back healthy and he's able to be the guy that people want Exum to be, then that's pretty much what you're talking
so
about.
So is that package worth giving up Alec Burks for?
I don't know. That sounds like a lot.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot for
who's
the Jazz.
Who's cost controlled for the next 4 years rather than just Collison's two.
And especially like with this rising cap, that cost control is pretty spectacular.
It's nice. Yeah.
And like we don't actually know that Ben McLemore is any good. Like he could just be the shooting guard version of Thomas Robinson. Like not actually a guy who should be getting minutes.
Yeah, to me the Burke Neto part of this deal is not that important. I don't think either of those guys
yeah,
have
I think
like
that's
tremendous
kind of a wash.
Value. But yeah, I think Alec Burks is probably the best asset in this deal.
Yeah.
Then Darren Collison, then back.
It is
McLemore.
The Kings. You could probably get a first out of this.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Burks and Burke for Collison, McLemore, and a first.
I think that's
the Kings first.
You may even get two out of them. I mean, you never know what Vlade's going to do.
I love it.
Yeah.
Let's just
call
Vlade.
Call this one in as well. I know Vlade pretty decently.
You do?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. We have mutual
and
friends.
And even you say that you never know what he's going to do.
You never know what he's going to do.
Okay. We do have one more question from Joseph Horner. Would the Jazz take a shot at Baron Davis and then maybe Ronnie Brewer after that?
Is it 2007?
It is.
If it's not, I'm going to say no.
They're probably not going to say
Baron Davis and I are in the same shape, so...
But he's playing in the D League.
Right. Well, he's
where
quite,
he's going to play.
He's quite a bit better than I am.
Rumored to be signing a D League contract is actually where we are in this.
Right. But Baron and I, I'm pretty sure, are in the same amount of shit. So that's everything you need to know about Baron Davis at 36 years old.
The fall of Ronnie Brewer still makes me sad because he was.
The
like,
one that broke his arm that messed up his jumper or just the fall of his career?
The fall of his career.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, his childhood dreams being shattered, that's a bummer. But, like, that he was such a good Jazz player and then got traded and just didn't fit at all. And, in fact, that second year he showed so much promise and then didn't improve at all. You know, maybe you see him becoming – but the league evolved too much for him to, play.
If we're bringing back old guys who probably shouldn't be in the league anymore, Matt Harper have eligibility? He can knock down a jumper. He's in the building.
It would get him off the play-by-play. Is that nice to say?
I don't know if we're allowed to say that.
We probably can't say that. Let's go ahead and take a break. On the next segment, we're going to go around the NBA, talking about some front office changes that's going on around the league right now, and notably not talking about play-by-play personnel. That's next on the Salt City Hoops Show on ESPN 700.
You're listening to Salt City Hoops on Utah's number one sports talk, ESPN 700.
All right, welcome back into the Salt City Hoops Show, ESPN 700. Andy Larson, Zach Harper with you. Because we can't say no to any question, and because the L.A. Rams just moved, well, the St. Louis Rams just moved to L.A., we were asked, what's the next NBA team to move by our producer, John LaFollette? We came up with New Orleans and Charlotte.
Yeah, that seems like the only teams that would be likely to move.
But if anything, I think it's an expansion situation to Seattle rather than a moving situation.
Yeah, like that probably makes more sense of expanding the league and turning that into much more of a deeper conversation of like trying to get more revenue
right
for the league and everything. Or, you know, Prokhorov, he's kind of all over the place right now.
He could move.
I could see him just saying, you know, let's go to Seattle.
We spent a lot of money and time with this whole Brooklyn thing.
But
and
clearly,
it's been, what, 2 years on the new arena?
That place is a mausoleum. That place is dead.
So I go there next week, right?
It's a beautiful arena. It's really cool.
But no one goes.
Nobody will be there.
So, yeah, I mean, I looked up tickets on StubHub, and they are $10 right now.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, for a New York City event is pretty...
It's pretty incredible. Yeah, you can't even get pizza
like
for $10.
Yeah, for Knicks tickets, it's a minimum $40.
Right.
So, and even that is
go try to get a beer in Brooklyn and see if you can get it for under $10.
Okay, that actually will be like a fun segment. I'll do like a video podcast of
there you go.
Beer for $10 or ticket for $10, and we'll find out if I can find a cheaper ticket or Brooklyn Nets ticket. Beer ticket? That's not a thing. Anyway. Let's go around the NBA like we do every time around this segment. I don't know what every week around this time that makes
more sense.
On a
weekly basis.
On a weekly basis,
we go around the NBA.
Let's start with some sad news about Andrew Smith, the former Butler player. Played with Gordon Hayward at Butler. Played with obviously under Brad Stevens, who's now the coach of the Boston Celtics. Let's go ahead and play a little bit of Brad Stevens' press conference today when he was asked about the news.
Yeah, the last week's been tough. You know, I was happy that I got a chance to say goodbye. And this is really about, you know, when you coach somebody, I mean, you get a lot more out of coaching them than they do from you. So that's that. I mean, I don't know. I could go on and on, and it wouldn't do him justice. So he was special. He was tough. Set a great example.
Obviously,
that's tough.
Yeah, super tough. I mean, clearly affected by his player. I mean,
he skipped a game recently to
right.
You know, to go. You know, I guess pay his
say goodbye. Essentially,
yeah. I mean, just awful situation.
I think it's cool that there is that connection between a coach and a player.
Yeah.
You know, Andrew Smith was a good player, certainly for Butler. Was an important player, but. Like what Brad Stevens said about him teaching him more than Brad taught Andrew was I thought really meaningful.
Yeah, very touching.
Moving on to like player and GM and coaching moves though. More I guess semi upbeat moves news, which is people not dying but instead just being fired. Nets fired Lionel Hollins and Billy King this weekend. Though I guess Billy King will help find the next general manager,
allegedly.
Which I think is such a funny role, right? Like, we just fired you, but you should help us find the next dude.
This is sort of Lawrence Frankish in the way that they're, like, reassigning him to, like, does he get that same cubicle in the basement where Lawrence Frank was pumping out all his reports? Like, is that what we're doing now?
That was one of my favorite short-lived blogs, by the way.
Oh, so good.
The Lawrence Frank's reports from his basement blogspot.com.
That was so good. I don't know. Like, I don't think that this is a wrong move.
No, I think both of those spots can clearly be upgraded.
Yeah.
However, whoever does get that job is in a bind for the next 3 to 4 years. Like, there's just nothing you can do because all of the draft picks have been traded.
I actually think, here's my idea.
Okay.
Now, some people will laugh at this because Brian Colangelo is involved, but I think you need the coach and GM to be on the same page. Like, Brian Colangelo, Mike D'Antoni.
Okay.
Go put them in Brooklyn with the understanding, like, hey, this is going to take a little while. Like, kind of like when D'Antoni was supposed to take over the Knicks and as they were gutting the team to create cap space to go get LeBron,
right,
which clearly worked. But you need an identity, and you need something that excites players to want to be there.
Mm.
And raising your shooting percentage and earning a bunch of money because you can finally like be a good offensive. Like, I think that's the only way to make this team a viable destination in some way over the next 3 years.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, I mean, so they're going to try to do it, by the way, by trying to sign John Calipari.
Oh, my God.
And his asking price is allegedly 10 years, $120 million. And quite frankly, he's probably going to get it. from one of Sacramento or the Brooklyn Nets. And I could see, like, Calipari's recruitment kind of strategy working on former Kentucky guys.
See, I don't.
I could see it working on, like, you don't see it working on, like, DeMarcus?
No. Well, I mean, I guess, like, if at that point DeMarcus Cousins is, well, I guess if he takes over the Kings, then you get DeMarcus Cousins to stay.
Yes.
But, but here, I think to say, give me 5 months, I will put you into my pro factory, and we're going to make you a first-round pick, or we're going to up your draft status or whatever. I think it's another thing to say, like, hey, trust me for the next 4 years.
And we're not going to be very good.
And we're not going to be very good. And by the way, like, I was a terrible coach when I was here 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, I just I don't think Calipari's leaving college unless there are major sanctions and violations that get uncovered and that kick him out of Kentucky.
See, and I think, A, maybe those sanctions and violations have already occurred, and so, like,
I would guess they have occurred, but
And if he can get a ten year, $120 million parachute out on the way out, like, more power to him. Kind of in, like, a Pete Carroll sort of way in the NFL.
Yeah, like, unless those sanctions are, you know, about to, like, drop in the next couple of years and he can see that coming in the future, why wouldn't Kentucky give him the same deal?
Yeah, I don't know how much money.
I mean, he makes a lot.
Makes a lot, but how much money does Kentucky make off of college basketball? I have no idea.
I'm assuming their boosters are doing pretty well.
Yeah.
So I think that you can make it work.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Like, he doesn't have a great reason to leave because he's already at, you know, the top program, I think it's fair to say, over the last, you know, what, 5-10 years?
Yeah, and I just think it's much easier to convince a guy to come there for a few months and become a pro rather than be a championship level player for 4 years.
I did like what Mikhail Prokhorov had to say, and by like, I mean I laughed at.
Right.
He said today in a press conference, I'm sure next season will be, I hope, a championship contender. Actually, he didn't say the because he's not very good at English. So I'm sure next season will be, I hope, championship contender. Frankly speaking, I deserve a championship now much more than 6 years ago. I think we have been really bold and we did our best in order to reach a championship. And I still believe with some luck, our results might have been more promising. But I'll do my best to make us a championship team.
You know, I'm not a good business person. Like, I would be a terrible business owner.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say that me being a bold, terrible business owner would mean that I deserve success.
Like, look, we made some hard decisions here.
We made some very questionable advertising targets there. But I still feel like I earned it.
We were bold. Some people questioned our moves, and in the end, they were right. But fortune favors the bold.
He also said, I think he said they were like two players away from being a title contender, which, you know, trade for Steph Curry, sign Kevin Durant. I think you are.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it works.
It's all happening. I just, yeah, I don't see that path.
You know, crazier things have happened.
Have
actually,
they?
Noel, I mean, Mikhail Prokhorov ran a team for 6 years.
But he bought the team. Like, having a lot of a rich guy buying a team and running it is not that surprising, right? Like, that's a tale as old as time itself.
Sure.
It's rich guy buys team, has fun, makes stupid choices.
Rebuttal, Vivek Ranadive in Sacramento. That has been insane.
Yeah, agreed.
So I think crazy things are capable of happening.
Crazy things are capable of happening, but, like, they have no assets. Like, they have, what, like, Rondae Hollis Jefferson's kind of fun-ish.
He's kind of, well, he's
also
like,
injured.
Yeah, out for 2 months.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, next season, I don't see the path to them.
They
got to
bring back the Brooklyn
contender.
Knight.
That's the problem.
That's what went
lame
wrong.
Lame mascot dumb.
Yeah.
Ken Berger, by the way, about the New Orleans Pelicans, reports that they are moving to hire Joe Dumars, former Pistons general manager, as the team's new basketball boss. Actually, right now, apparently, they're having Saints GM Mickey Loomis make some personnel decisions, which is weird that they have, like, this football guy making basketball's kind of
I think they share
choices.
The same training staff, which seems like a terrible idea.
Yeah. Yeah. That's super weird.
Yeah. Or it's the same medical staff, but it's somewhere in that field. That they like, I don't think football and basketball are all that similar in terms of the kind of bodies you need.
No, I mean it's still like doctordom. That's all I know about what those people
sure.
do. But, like, you're right that they're very different injuries.
Yeah. By the way, hiring Joe Dumars is an awful idea.
Right. He wasn't a good general manager.
He was 14 years ago.
Okay, that's true. He was for like, he was when he set up the Pistons. And then in the last 10 years, he has not been good.
Being like, well, you know, Byron Scott did lead a team to two NBA finals as a coach. Like, yeah, in like 2003. We're in 2016. He gave Charlie Villanueva $48 million.
Yes.
Like, you can't do this. You can't, you can't be this much like New Orleans Pelicans.
He can hold two phones at one time.
He's very good at holding two phones at once. It's an iconic picture. I feel like you can get anybody to hold two phones.
Also in Pelicans news, which we have a lot of, Quincy Pondexter out for the remainder of the season. Still has the best first letter of your first name, first part of your last name, nickname of all time, Coupon.
Coupon. And he also has an adorable like Siberian Husky type dog. Like, looks like that, named Buckets, which is a name I would name my dog.
That's awesome. Yeah, so anyway, that Coupon is out is a tragedy for all involved.
Sucks.
And maybe the biggest story of the day was the New York Times Uno report.
This is great.
About the Atlanta Hawks playing a revved-up version of Uno on all of their team flights, and they're just, like, great quotes from Dennis Schroeder and Al Horford and Kent Bazemore of how... how intense they are.
I love that Tim Hardaway Jr. he skipped a game and then got kicked out of the group because he decided not to play on one flight.
Tough game after a tough loss. You're injured. You're like, man, guys, I got to sleep. You can't play Uno ever again.
Yeah, you're
out.
Those
are the rules. As Kent Bazemore said, Uno is always a thrill.
It's always a thrill. They bring the heat. Like, what they do is they draw all the draw two and draw four and reverse and skip cards. Like, they double them up in the
right
deck, and it's like they call it bringing the heat.
They add up all those cards from other decks.
Yeah, it's like really is a super Uno game.
It is the WWE of Uno, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, it might even be like ECW.
If they published rules, we should play it, right? Like,
I love Uno. I've destroyed my nieces
really,
at Uno.
Like,
I think Candyland.
Uno on its own, I think, needs some heat.
It does need some heat.
I think it needs some heat.
Yeah.
I think you need to do, like, if you put down draw four on a draw four card, then the next person has to draw eight. Like, that addition.
They conspired to make Bazemore draw 50.
50 cards!
50 is a lot of cards!
Are they putting money on Uno? They've got to be putting money on it.
I think they're putting money on who gets on the plane first. Like, yeah, I would imagine they're putting money on Uno.
All right, we got to take a break. On the next segment, we answered the remainder of your questions. We got like five left that we got to get through. But regardless, we'll make it happen. That's next on the Salt City Hoops Show on ESPN 700.
To Salt City Hoops on Utah's number one sports talk, ESPN 700. Basketball is my favorite sport. I like the way they dribble up and down the court, just like I'm the king on the microphone. So it's Dr. J and Moses Malone.
Curtis Blow raises some good points.
Certainly.
Basketball is his favorite sport. They dribble it up and down the court quite nicely.
He shouts out Dr. J and Moses Malone, who were very good players.
I play the song, by the way, because, again, we're doing this crowdsourcing show today where we asked, hey, you guys, what should we talk about? And Joey, in all of his infinite wisdom, said basketball. So,
yeah,
this is basketball.
I feel like we accomplished that.
We've done it. It's done.
Curtis Blow's favorite play is the alley-oop. He says so. You know what? I think it's my favorite play, too.
It's a pretty good play.
It's a good play. When done properly, it can be quite devastating.
Again, I still love the semi-pro scene.
Oh, it's so great.
Of the alley-oop foul or two fouls called.
We can't just have people jumping up in the air like that.
Anyway, we also had six different questions from John English. Five of them which had to do with movies, or TV shows. Let's see. Yes, is it fair to call The Martian a comedy? Should the Powerball winner hire a new lawyer for Stephen Avery? It wanted us to talk about an appreciation of David Bowie's performance as Pontius Pilate. No, I don't know.
Pontius Pilate.
Pontius Pilate, thank you. Vin Diesel's career reimagined without Triple X. and which NBA player deserves your own Curb Your Enthusiasm show, which that one's pretty basketball-y. Do you have an answer for that?
Yeah, Rasheed Wallace.
Okay.
I don't care that he's retired. My answer for anything of, like, who would you like to hang out with? Who would you like to see do this? It's always Rasheed Wallace.
But his top five unpronounceable college coaches' names request intrigued me.
Yeah.
And so I looked up all the Division I college coaches' names, and there are some pretty good names amongst college coaches. I actually came up with 12.
Wow. I couldn't name 12 college coaches right
now. No, I mean, this was Wikipedia enhanced. This is I don't think I know 12 college coaches, period. Gravel Craig is somebody's name. He's coach of the Bethune-Cookman Wildcats.
That sounds like a place.
I just like that he has Craig. He has a last name as a first name and a first name as a last name.
Yeah.
Gravel Craig. Barclay Radabaugh. Again, Barclay as a real
person. Sounds
like
a John Hodgman character.
Yeah, it's not a real person, yeah. Except for it definitely would be for like the Charleston Southern Buccaneers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you're from Charleston. Oh, okay, it makes sense now. Duggar Baucom from the Citadel. Again, the Citadel is my favorite college name because it has an article in it, right? Like, it's not, sure. It's like Ohio State University.
It's not a made up, like, yeah, right.
The
They're
Citadel.
Faking it. The Citadel knows what's up.
Mike Krzyzewski, of course, is unpronounceable. Has no relation from the letters in that name to the syllables.
I don't understand it.
It doesn't make any sense.
I hope that's not rude, but I just don't understand it.
Yeah. There's a guy named Link Darner who coaches the Green Bay Phoenix. Link spelled L-I-N-C. I just think that's a weird first name. I think it's like a Vegas hotel. Like,
sure.
As a name. Just
stay at the Link Darner, great buffet.
Right. Aaron Gano, presumably is how you pronounce that, from the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors.
Sure.
Fran O'Hanlon is a fun name. Lafayette Leopards.
If I was the play-by-play person for Lafayette Leopards, I would probably say Han O'Franlin a lot by mistake.
Right. Like, those are three very similar syllables. Steve Wojciechowski, or actually, we have someone here on staff to pronounce that for us.
Steve Wojciechowski.
It's like, where's your house key, but put Woj on front, okay?
That's great.
Where's your house key? Is that, but put Woj on the front? So Woj, where's your house key?
Yeah, that's
it's how I've been instructed to pronounce it.
Yeah.
Thanks to mispronouncer.com/miscellaneous/audio/Steve Wojciechowski. Lavelle Moten, that's just kind of like a Utah name, like Lavelle. To put in the mid capital V and then Moten, I don't know if you say that Moten, Moton, I don't know. It's
reminds me of Brock Modem.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's Brock,
who is Australian, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
and
but he
was
played
on
for
the
Utah.
Yeah, was on the
team?
Jazz summer league team 2 years in a row. Did some good things at points.
I like him.
Dave Wojcik. Wojcik. I guess if you have a Woj start to your name, it's
you're
gonna
probably
be...
going to be involved in basketball.
Yes, and it's going to be confusing for readers later on, or coaches or whatever. Horace Broadnax. See, that just reminds me of the Lorax, right? Like
Horace Broadnax is an amazing name. Oh man,
Broadnax spelled B-R-O-A-D-N-A-X.
Yeah,
and then we've got Todd Kowalczyk. I think presumably, but Todd only has one D. So they...
Ooh, I don't like that.
They splurged on the last name, but went very cheap on the first
name.
Yeah,
I'm out on that, because that reminds me of, like, Zac Efron, who I actually like, but I don't like the way he spells his name.
Yeah, that's misguided.
Yeah.
We do have another Twitter question, by the way, before we get into the Jazz's upcoming schedule. KSL Triple Team, by the way, I do the KSL game recaps every day on KSL.com called the Triple Team. Got me thinking yesterday. I wrote about... of the current Lakers roster, which players would make it onto the Jazz's roster?
Okay.
And then he asked, would you guys do a D'Angelo Russell, Dante Exum swap?
Ooh.
I'm going to say no, and I know that's crazy based on, again, Dante Exum 7PR that I've mentioned like four times this show, but he has a much better defensive position than D'Angelo Russell does at this point. Like,
yeah.
He's got that base to stand on no matter what.
I would say yes, but I'm very high on D'Angelo Russell. I think he fits really well in today's NBA. I am worried that he's maybe not a point guard.
Yeah.
And so, like, if he's not a point guard, then it gets trickier. But I love his game, and I would do that swap but be very cautious as I did it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the sort of question that is, like, designed to embarrass you 3 years down the road, right?
Oh, almost everything I say, I think, is designed to embarrass me 3 years down the road, if not sooner.
Good news, we're not recording these or anything.
Right.
We are, actually.
These mics aren't on.
You can listen to any of the show that you missed on saltcityhoops.com, just by the way, or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Let's get that out of the way. We talked about this earlier in the show, but the Jazz have a pretty easy schedule coming up for the rest of the week, and actually next week too. So at Portland tomorrow, home against the Kings Thursday, and then home against the Lakers Saturday, and then next week they play at the Charlotte Hornets. Sorry, the Bobcats no longer exist. And then two games in New York at Knicks, at Nets, and then at Wizards. All of those teams are under 500.
Yes.
It looks like a time where the Jazz could pick up some wins, maybe move up in the Western Conference.
Prediction, all three games this week, wins.
Yeah?
And I'm going to say plus 41 in those three games.
Wow. Okay, so yeah. You're even going score differential.
Yeah, and if I'm wrong, you can't hold it against me.
No.
Because predictions are stupid.
And certainly not that the Russell Exum thing.
No.
Please don't bring that up against us ever, regardless of how it turns out.
Yeah.
All right, that's our show. Thank you guys so much for listening. Please check us out on saltcityhoops.com, the ESPN True Hoop affiliate for the Utah Jazz. Thank you again, once again, on ESPN 700.